He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, and I don't care who wins the national championship, who wins the Heisman, who wins NFL MVP, and who wins the Super Bowl, because nothing will be more triumphant this football season than the powerful, inspirational lesson of Jalen Hurts, which will live on as long as there are children to teach and motivational tales to share. Look, stuff happens to all of us in life, often not fair or sensible. In Hurts' case, he lost his job as Alabama's starting quarterback despite a 26-2 record and the SEC Player of the Year award as a true freshman because he lacked the passing skills of Tua Tagovailoa, who replaced Hurts, you remember, in the second half of the national title game and rallied the Crimson Tide over Georgia. Now, Hurts could have sulked and moped all year. He could have transferred, as so many players do these days. He could have listened to his father, who suggested he'd be the biggest free agent in college football history. But Jalen stayed right there in Tuscaloosa, figuring he could improve more as a passer in Nick Saban's program than elsewhere, and also valuing, get this, his degree at Alabama. And in a flash on Saturday, in the fury of the SEC title game, the roles suddenly were reversed. An amazing story. Opportunity magically reappearing for Hurts. Tagovailoa performing erratically in that game, maybe losing the Heisman Trophy in the process, first suffered an ankle sprain, and then he had his foot stepped on by his lineman, Jonah Williams. And in a showcase of selflessness, perseverance, and true character, Hurts entered the game down 28-21 to that same Georgia team and flipped open the playbook on how to handle personal adversity. This time, he was the one who bailed out his team and the legendary coach who had benched him. And now you can be certain Hurts has a future in the NFL, in business, in anything he wants to do in life. Afterward, Hurts reflecting on his difficult but very rewarding journey.
Tonight was amazing. All I could do all year is kind of wait on my moment and, you know, persevere through the adversity and, you know, stay positive, you know, be uplifting to my teammates, because at the end of the day, you know, I'm still that same leader to this team, and, you know, I love those guys in the locker room. You know, none of this has been easy. Since the championship game, it hasn't been easy. But I think it shows true character and true heart, you know, trying to fight to the finish. And then I trust my abilities, and I know there are always things that I can improve on. Being silenced about all the other stuff that's said about me, you know, that's not easy. But, you know, people have doubted me. People have said I should leave. People said I should have left right after the game, you know. And I'm blessed enough to be graduating on the 15th.
Yes, sir.
And, boy, you know, congratulations. Not many people realize how important that is for me.
Yeah.
So I don't think transferring was ever a thing, yeah, you know. And I'm blessed to be here.
And have you ever seen Nick Saban cry? I hadn't, but tears were coming out of his eyes when he discussed Hurts on the field in Atlanta. Later in the interview room, he delivered the perfect tribute, rightfully so.
I've probably never been more proud of a player than
Jalen. You know, it's unprecedented to have a guy that won as many games as he won, I think 26 or something, over a two-year period, start as a freshman, only lose a couple games this whole time that he was a starter, and then all of a sudden he's not the quarterback. All right, and how do you manage that? How do you handle that? You got to have a tremendous amount of character and class to put the team first, knowing that your situation is not what it used to be. And for a guy that's a great competitor, you know, that takes a lot. It's not easy to do. And he's always put the team first. He's gone in the game whenever we've asked him to go in the game, and we played him as much as we could, so that if this came up, he was going to be ready. And I think it worked out great. And I think this is a great example of why guys don't need to run off and just transfer every chance they get or every time something doesn't work out. Jalen is going to be a more successful person in his life because of what he went through, not winning 26 games, but when he went through this year trying to be the kind of person who had to support other people after he was a star player.
Some will say Hurts should start the national semifinal game against Oklahoma, or at the very least, the two should split time. But come on here. Assuming Tua's high ankle sprain heals over the next 2 weeks, as Saban says, he's going to get the start, and Hurts will return to the bench. And that's the way it should be, I suppose. Tagovailoa should keep the job after an injury. After all, he had put together a Heisman resume before Saturday when, truth be told, I think he lost the trophy to Oklahoma's Kyler Murray. This situation, unprecedented in sports, somebody of Hurts' caliber bouncing from hero to second string to hero to second string. But if he's needed the next two games, we know he'll be ready with that All-American repertoire. Again, I've never seen anything like this in sports. And if you ever wonder why Saban has the most well-run machine in the history of college football, if not college sports, consider this to be Exhibit A. He maintained order in the locker room when it could have been ripped apart by this quarterback controversy. And he also somehow kept Hurts in the program when his father was getting calls from programs everywhere. And Hurts had the maturity and the resolve to ignore his tough circumstance and show a willingness to improve as a passer, which was on display in that comeback against the Dogs. It could be he excels as a dual-threat quarterback on the next level, but for now, he's absorbing universal praise as the star who pushed aside his ego and didn't allow being subjugated as a college junior to define the rest of his life. And while I look at Georgia in this game and say, how in the hell did you blow another one? Let's see, a missed chip shot field goal, inserting quarterback Josh Fields for a play when Jake Fromm was having a masterful game, and then failing on that foolish fake punt, quick snap to Fields on 4th and 11 at midfield. Oh! Despite all of that, it was Hurts who did take advantage of that blunder by Kirby, not so smart, by smoothly leading his team to the winning score. I'm not sure who wins Sports Person of the Year in 2018, but Jalen Hurts is squarely in the discussion. And despite shameless lobbying by SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey and CBS analyst Gary Danielson, I'm sorry, a two-loss Georgia team did not deserve a spot in the college football playoff Final Four, not when the Bulldogs gave that one away, yet another one, to Bama in a state that is becoming infamous for big moment football collapses. Remember the Falcons. Again, Kirby Smart, why gamble on 4th and 11 so late in the game and give it right away to your mentor, Nick Saban? Why, Kirby? Why?
Kirby, can you explain your mindset on the fake punt?
Yeah, we had been carrying that for, actually carried it last year, and thought it was there, and it was there today, and we were going to snap the ball quick, and we took too long to snap the ball. They didn't have a guy covered. We had a guy wide open, and we took so long to snap it that they ended up recognizing it and got the guy covered late, but it was probably 20, 30 yards field position, that we came to win the game. We wanted to try to win the game. And I talked to the guys before the game about it and said, if we get an opportunity to run it, we're going to run it. And it was there. We just didn't get it snapped before they covered the guy.
Because of that unforgivable gaffe, I say the committee got it right. Alabama 1, Clemson 2, Notre Dame 3, Oklahoma 4, with Ohio State, in spite of another magnificent performance by sure Heisman finalist Dwayne Haskins, ultimately aced out, pushed back to number 6 because of its 29-point loss to Purdue in that very uneven, turmoil-filled season for Urban Meyer. And Oklahoma may have won twice on Saturday, with Murray again sensational in a revenge win over Texas, a performance that should push him past Tagovailoa, who struggled mightily before his injury, for the Heisman Trophy. I would vote for Murray now, and his presence gives us a delicious matchup against an Alabama defense that was shredded up by Jake Fromm and the Georgia running backs. I'd also advise Murray to think about an NFL future, which he's putting aside as he moves on to a baseball career with the Oakland A's, who gave him a $4 million plus bonus. Look, with athleticism now trumping size at the quarterbacking position in the NFL, see Baker Mayfield, hell, see Drew Brees, Murray has the arm and the leadership ability and the running skills to succeed at the next level. He's also smart enough to want to preserve his brain, so for now, he is the latest project for Billy Beane, who sees some Ricky Henderson in Murray. Now, might Murray become a two-sport pro? Deion Sanders once did it, Bo Jackson once did it, but I'd argue that Bo, who I covered during that two-sport fling, blew a Hall of Fame career in one sport or the other by going both ways. He should have stuck with one or the other. This is a different era now, and I think Murray's performance level likely would be diluted in both sports if he played both sports, whereas he might excel as an all-star or a pro bowler in a solo discipline. I'd play football if I were Murray. I respect his decision to protect his brain, but I think he's a better football player than he is a baseball player. His coach at Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley, doesn't hesitate suggesting the Sooners will beat Alabama and win a national title despite a mushy defense. That could be an absolute shootout. And he is stumping for Murray as the Heisman winner, which would be a first. Riley, just 35 years old, coveted by the NFL, coaching back-to-back Heisman winners in Mayfield and Murray.
I don't want to compare it to anybody else because this guy's done a lot of special things. He's done some things in college football that have never happened before. But I think the biggest thing to me is he's had to do it in big moments. You know, he had to do it with all the talk about, you know, about Baker and replacing him, and there's no chance you're going to be this good. And then he's had to continually make big plays and big games throughout the entire year, and he's done that. And he's been the most dynamic player in the country. The things he does moving, the things he does throwing the football, how good he is mentally. I mean, you saw it today. So, there's a lot of other great ones out there. I get that. But our guy right here is pretty special.
As for Clemson Notre Dame, well, prepare for a possible ugh. In fact, probable ugh. Alabama-Clemson game again. Alabama-Clemson. I'm tired of Alabama-Clemson in the national title game. Go Oklahoma, right? The Irish will have a hard time with the Clemson front four, and they won't stop an offense led by game-breaking back Travis Etienne and freshman quarterback Trevor Lawrence, who played the Tua role when Dabo Sweeney inserted him at midseason in place of Kelly Bryant, who subsequently left the program. You think Bryant, who was deciding between transferring to Auburn or Missouri right now, watched Jalen Hurts on Saturday? He probably didn't. And is Georgia a better team than Notre Dame, which didn't have to play a conference title game as an independent, didn't have to play Georgia's schedule? Yes, I think Georgia, with my eyeballs, would beat Notre Dame if they played tomorrow. And it's hard to argue with Smart when he says that Saban, his former boss, wouldn't want to play Georgia in a rematch in 4 weeks.
Well, it boils down to one thing. Do you want the four best teams in or not? It's that simple. You know, they sat at home last year and got to go in the game while everybody else was beating each other up, and they had a good football team. Give that coach across the sideline a vote who he doesn't want to play. And it'll start with us. I promise you he don't want to play us.
But the Dogs, remember, tripped up against LSU as well, and the Irish went undefeated. And it's not about our eyeballs. It's about the body of work. Why do you think they practice all August and then start playing games September, October, November? Here we are in December. What? We're just going to base it on one game Saturday? Georgia tripped up against LSU, which fell out of the top 10. And now we've got a situation where they had a lead against Alabama and blew it. And I'm supposed to say, hey, they're a top four team. They blew the game. A team that blows the game that way with that hideous play call does not deserve to be in the Final Four, okay? Notre Dame belongs. It took care of business. Oklahoma took care of business. Georgia did not take care of business. In my mind, no controversy here. Saturday, eyeballs aside. Here was committee chairman Rob Mullins explaining why Oklahoma's conference title trumped Georgia's strength of schedule and any eyeball test.
Well, we spent a considerable time on it, as you might expect. And in the end, you know, one loss conference champion with their only loss being in a neutral field, close loss to a ranked team, which they avenged in their conference championship. As we've talked about the last several weeks, obviously, dynamic offense. And, you know, their defense has made some big plays in the last couple of weeks. Well, I mean, there's a lot of discussion. And as you might expect in the room, we're looking at full body of work. We understand the charges to get the four best teams. And when you're looking at all that, every bit of that matters. Eye test, data, all of that gets discussed. And I can assure you that every combination was discussed in the room. There was at least one member on every one of these combinations for 4, 5, and 6 that was represented a case for each of those teams to be 4. There was strong debate. There was even division in the room. And you know, we went early into the morning and got back at it again after a couple hours of sleep.
So how did Georgia then...
Of course, an 8-team playoff system would have allowed Georgia, Ohio State, and streak-riding Central Florida into the title mix, but that playoff is not happening anytime soon with 8 teams. So enjoy the fact these semifinals, though featuring the same old blue blood names, will not be on New Year's Eve this time. That was a dreadful idea by ESPN, reflected by weak TV ratings. So now we're going to have these games on Saturday the 29th, not that far off. Alabama-Oklahoma will be a classic, and thankfully it won't be impeded by New Year's Eve parties. My favorite to win it all? Do I even have to say? You know the voice by now, and he was talking Sunday about Oklahoma and Kyler Murray.
Well, I haven't seen a lot, but I've heard a lot, and I did watch a little of the game yesterday before we went to our game, and they're pretty a dynamic group. You know, they've got a lot of weapons. They make a lot of explosive plays. We played against him a little bit when he was at A&M, and he is a very dynamic guy in terms of his athletic ability, his quickness, his ability to make plays with his feet, and he's turned into a really, really efficient passer.
Put it this way, if Nick can pull one out against Georgia this time, just as he Houdini'd it in the national title game, who is going to stop him for his record-breaking title number 7? The Kareem Hunt case, as I said on Friday, is just as damning for Roger Goodell in the NFL as the Ray Rice case was 4 years ago. First, there is the presence of a chilling video that is indisputable. And second, the NFL did not make much effort, I can't believe this, to get in front of this incident back in February when it happened, interviewing neither Hunt nor the accuser, and claiming the Cleveland hotel where the incident happened rebuffed a subpoena to see the surveillance tape, even though TMZ had no problem finding that tape and publishing it Friday. The NFL has these gigantic, powerful legal firms, and they can't get a hotel in Cleveland to hand over the tape, yet TMZ can get the tape? Huh? In this case, I would approve of the NFL paying for the tape, okay? Pay for the tape, see what's on the tape. That's what TMZ did. They paid for the tape. You can do that, Roger. You didn't want to do that, Roger Goodell. Disgracefully, despite seemingly exhaustive efforts to address issues of domestic abuse, the NFL clearly is in hot water again, as are the Chiefs. The league and the Chiefs knew this incident took place, with Hunt shoving and kicking a woman in the hallway of the hotel where he lived. Did the NFL intentionally cover it up? Did the NFL purposely not try hard enough to locate that tape in the interest of protecting the so-called league shield? And with the Chiefs now saying Hunt lied to them when he was asked about this in the offseason, why did owner Clark Hunt take Kareem Hunt at face value without further investigation by the Chiefs? These were the central damning issues in the Ray Rice case. And if Goodell doesn't have some answers here soon, you wonder this time how long he should remain in the commissioner's chair. Come on, Roger, fess up. What the hell is going on here? The Chiefs, who say they hadn't seen the footage until Friday and that Kareem lied to them about the incident, released Hunt immediately. But that doesn't excuse the distinct possibility that they knew more than they let on because they wanted to protect the star running back in their powerhouse offense, one of the few backs who can gain 15, 18 yards in a chunk these days running the football. Kareem Hunt contacted ESPN to deliver his side of the story, apologizing and saying he was, quote, in the wrong, unquote, yet leaving many holes unfilled in his discussion with Lisa Salters.
Honestly, I just want to let the world know, you know, how sorry I am for my actions. And, you know, it's been a tough time for me, and I'm extremely embarrassed because of that video.
Kareem, we've all seen the videos. You've seen the videos. I think it's fair to say that many would say that those images, they speak for themselves. What is there for you to say?
I'm definitely not that type of person. And my mother raised me right. I was raised by my mom and my grandma. And it was just us. And they've always taught me well. And I know right from wrong. And I'm always a person who want to see and make everybody happy.
So what happened? Take me back to that night. I understand this occurred in the hallway of your residence in Cleveland back in February of this year. What happened?
Honestly, it was just a long night. And to be exact, it don't really matter what happened. I was in the wrong. I could have, you know, took responsibility and, you know, made the right decision to, you know, find a way to de-escalate the whole situation.
Well, I think it does matter, though. We need to hear from you how you got to that point. What happened?
It was definitely some things that were said and did that I did not like, and that's not an excuse. It's not. I'm that person in that video did not deserve that. I didn't mean to hurt anybody or anything like that. It's really tough. It's tough because, like, I feel like I let a lot of people down, and I just really want to, you know, apologize to everybody, the Chiefs organization, my family, and close friends.
Who is this person? How did she end up being in the hallway of your residence?
Honestly, I never met the girl before besides that one time. I met her one time, and it was just kind of like my first 2 days living at this new place at the Nine in Cleveland, and kind of just had some friends over.
What were you arguing about in the hallway?
It was just a disagreement, and I honestly wanted her just to leave, but it's no excuse for me to act that way or to even, you know, put myself in that position.
Again, according to reports, the accuser claims the situation escalated when she refused to have sex with a man in Hunt's apartment, and Hunt claims the woman used the N-word, which triggered his shoving and screaming and kicking. just in his early 20s, Hunt obviously failed miserably in handling this situation. This is another example. I've learned this lesson to carefully watch your associations. As I've said repeatedly, in these times when opportunists can lie about domestic abuse, the video does not lie, and Hunt will have to live with that. Yet while the NFL apparently has banned Ray Rice for life without saying so, the league has allowed Hunt's former Kansas City teammate Tyreek Hill to keep playing in the league and thriving in the league after he pled guilty in 2015 while back in college to choking and hitting his pregnant girlfriend. And Hill's playing in the league. And unlike the Rice case, Hunt's accuser was not his significant other. That should be pointed out. But somebody who Hunt says showed up in his apartment and wouldn't leave. So the circumstance is different than Rice's wife in the elevator. It's completely different circumstance, yet nonetheless, violence on video. Kicking and shoving is kicking and shoving. Should Hunt receive a second shot down the road? Some will say, nope, the social justice warriors, the media, without really delving into it, it's just a chance to get some hits on, you know, Twitter and get your social media traffic up, and you know, that's how they think. They're narrow-minded people. Me, I'm not narrow-minded. I have perspective. I say, given what I know right now, after watching the video, hearing his explanation, I think 2 or 3 years from now, if the NFL is giving a second chance to Tyreek Hill, yes, they should give one to Hunt. And yes, they should give one to Ray Rice, although by now he's too old to play. A lot of people are going to say no. I say 2 to 3 years from now. There are so many double standards when it comes to domestic violence, much of it political, much of it determined by scared, incompetent management people trying to protect their asses. There remains a hazy gray area when it comes to he said, she said episodes without video evidence. And shame on the USA Today writer, I don't know who it was, I don't care, who wondered why video is even necessary to convict somebody who has been accused. Why? Because people lie. Some accusers do lie. That's why. Duh! Have you ever heard of extortion? You know, payoffs. Why do they let these guys write for publications such as USA Today? This was a male writer, by the way. I don't know who he was. Honestly, I have a few people in the business I respect. Most I don't, because they don't do enough homework. They don't understand the topics they're talking about. They're not paid well. They come on the cheap. Their companies are struggling. And I don't really pay attention the way I once did. On this very topic, did you see how the Chicago Cubs are handling the case of Addison Russell, who was accused by his ex-wife in a blog post of years of physical and emotional abuse? Now, Russell never has been charged with a crime, and there is no video evidence. And while the Cubs did offer him a 2019 contract, they are not assuring Russell a place on the roster when he's eligible to return from a Major League Baseball mandated suspension in early May, instead choosing to act as counselors of sorts in helping both Russell and his ex-wife get through this period. I commend Cubs boss Theo Epstein for his human approach, but I repeat, Russell has denied the allegations, apologizing only for, quote, past behavior, unquote, which could mean anything. Please understand here that Major League Baseball has no real due process. Once a player is accused, he is basically railroaded, regardless of whether the police were involved, regardless of any charges being involved. MLB conducts its own investigation. And in almost every instance, a player is given a choice by the commissioner's office. Either accept a suspension for violating our policy, or we will run your ass out of the game. In essence, MLB allows the accuser to control the process. And while some players are guilty of sin, others might be the victims of lies. Sorry I said that, but that is the truth. Some people lie. MLB is playing a political public relations game, and MLB is not interested in truly getting to the bottom of what happens in a relationship. Domestic violence is very complex and not always what it seems. After the facts are all spun up amid corporate agendas and prosecutors and commissioners and teams and agents and lawyers, and what comes out in the wash sometimes isn't close to being the truth. One thing I do know, Des Bryant needs to just shut up about this. In a deleted Instagram post, the former Cowboys receiver tried to defend Hunt after the video was published, writing that he was on Team Kareem and wanted to, quote, know what provoked Hunt, unquote, and, quote, what's deeper, unquote, than the video showed. Wrote Dez, quote, I advise all future young stars this, stay your course. Just because your money get better, it doesn't mean the prettier women is better. I'm quoting Dez. Protect yourself, because it will only be one side of the story if you ever get into some expletive. Save the explanation. End quote, Dez Bryant. Bryant, who removed the post after 15 minutes, later wrote, quote, I never said I support domestic violence, unquote. So much for the brief progress Bryant made with the Saints before he was injured. He just might have cost himself the rest of his career. Oh, and there's this. In a feature on ESPN's College Game Day, Tua Tagovailoa said he loves and respects his father for training him for his football career, but that sometimes his father would use a belt to discipline him. This comes after Adrian Peterson admitted last week that he still uses a belt on his son. Sadly, these abuse stories never are going away. The Chiefs are trying to move past the Hunt debacle with his friend, star quarterback Patrick Mahomes, towing the company line and not even remotely trying to defend Hunt.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to him, probably keep it to myself between me and him, but I mean, yeah, we had a close relationship. I saw the stuff that happened, and I mean, we don't do those things. But at the same time, I just kind of focus on our organization, the Chiefs, and I know we have to move forward and keep going out there and winning football games if we want to have success this season.
And tight end Travis Kelce, meanwhile, said he was heartbroken by it all.
I mean, I'm pretty sure it broke everybody's heart in the office. We don't know Kareem to be that guy. Unfortunately, things happen in life. You just have to move on and try and persevere through the hardships. He's still a brother. We're here for him. Hopefully he can get some things corrected in his life and find his way back out on the football field. But for this team, we're going to keep pushing forward. We have a determined mindset to be somewhere in February.
Aaron Rodgers finally got his wish on his 35th birthday, with the Packers firing Coach Mike McCarthy after that putrid home loss to the Cardinals. Their Super Bowl victory together was eons ago, and McCarthy has failed to maximize a Hall of Fame quarterback in his prime, while the older likes of Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Philip Rivers continued to excel. Before the announcement was made by team president Mark Murphy, Rodgers was asked about the possibility of McCarthy being axed. Aaron didn't sound too emotional about it.
Yeah, you know what, it's really not something I'm thinking about in this moment right now. It is my birthday, so I've got a lot of people in town that I'm looking forward to getting back to. But it's disappointing, you know. I said in production meeting this week, I hate losing way more than I love winning. And I think that's a trait of competitors across the sporting world. So it's frustrating to be in this position. We've won so many games in a row in December, home games, against good teams and against teams like this who we should beat every single time. So that part is frustrating, especially when you think about, you know, wanting to be a playoff team and feeling like there was, you know, a great deal of hope this week during the week of preparation.
Joe Philbin is the interim head coach, and the Packers, I think, will be opting for the new NFL trend, a young offensive guru to maximize Rodgers and try to inject a new culture into this very stale operation. Yet, it's a double-edged sword. Why would anybody want to deal with the demanding Rodgers at age 35? and as many as six other teams could have a coaching opening. Browns, Jets, Bucks, Panthers, Bengals, Broncos, hell, maybe the Steelers. Josh McDaniels pulled out after getting the Indianapolis job last offseason because he didn't want to move his family, supposedly, from New England. I think he wants to live in Green Bay. John D. Filippo, the Minnesota offensive coordinator, might be ripe for the opportunity. Or Zach Taylor, the Rams quarterbacks coach. Or Matt LaFleur, the Tennessee offensive coordinator. Or Eric Bieniemy, the Chiefs OC. Or Pete Carmichael, the Saints OC, getting the drift here. The Packers will talk to Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, but is this still a good job? The race for the Super Bowl trophy, thankfully, is more wide open and unpredictable than in the college game. If the AFC seemed to be the domain of the Chiefs, Hunt's release and the team's defensive holes open up the door for a team we're tired of, the Patriots, and a team we would love to see finally break down the Super Bowl door, the Chargers. Could you imagine a Rams-Chargers all-LA Super Bowl in Atlanta? Hell, we could do that in Inglewood. I don't know if there's like a high school field over there. I'm sure there is. Play it there! Because these teams are going to be sharing a stadium there in a couple of years. Play it there. Play it at the Rose Bowl. Play it out here. Not in Atlanta. I'm getting ahead of myself. But it's not improbable after Old Man Rivers and the Chargers, a franchise of little consequence in L.A. right now, with a head coach, Anthony Lynn, who wouldn't be recognized walking naked on the beach, went into Pittsburgh without star running back Melvin Gordon and stunned the Steelers on Sunday night. Did you see that ending? The Chargers, who had benefited from a false start not called on an earlier Rivers touchdown pass, saw their latest kicker in their crazy kick-o-rama game, Michael Badgley, miss the initial game winner, but Pittsburgh's Joe Hayden was offside, so forget overtime. Here's another chance for Badgley, but his next attempt blocked by Artie Burns, but wait, Burns was offside. Finally, third try. Badgley nails it from 29, despite the fact that, yes, Burns once again was offside. Who is coaching the Pittsburgh Steelers? Oh, Mike Tomlin, who might not be coaching them for long. Here was Tomlin. There's always drama on and off the field. And this time his team blows a 16-point lead in a season and really a 3 or 4 year period of severe disappointments.
Disappointing game in a lot of ways. First and foremost, the result. You know, we got to win those. We didn't. The consequences, we'll absorb it. We'll be back. We didn't establish rhythm in the beginning of the second half. We had a couple drives killed by penalties, holding penalties. It's catastrophic. You know. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I'm going to do that because I sent enough money to New York.
Meanwhile, Rivers so chill down the stretch, calmly directing the winning field goal drive amid those screams and waving towels and Pramonti sandwiches being chomped down. No, not really. Everybody was too nervous to eat. Here was Rivers loving life right now, yet the latest ageless quarterback to rule the NFL.
Heck of a win. It's a heck of a win. We didn't lose fight. This team, we're not ever going to quit. We were 0-4 last year. We've been through some adversity. We've moved to a new city. I mean, we've done a lot. It's been a lot. And the guys keep fighting no matter what. This game reminded me of a game, shoot, over 10 years ago in 2006 at Denver on Sunday night. It was very similar score at halftime and very similar final. And it was just a heck of a team win. So many guys contributed in all three phases.
These teams could play again in the postseason, but the Steelers are not championship timber. I think that's obvious now. I might have more faith in Houston and Baltimore, both continuing to roll behind the playmaking and the game managing of Deshaun Watson and rookie Lamar Jackson. And if John Harbaugh in Baltimore flips back to Joe Flacco after Jackson's winning streak here, I think Harbaugh deserves to lose his job. The Patriots have been way under the radar this year after their dissension drama of recent times, but their airtight, balanced home win over Minnesota shows they are still dangerous. You had to love how Vikings receiver Adam Thielen started jawing at Bill Belichick when he thought the Patriots were trying to fake an injury. Oh, the Patriots trying to do something illegal? Good for you, Adam Thielen. Next time, win the game. Didn't matter, that sequence. The Patriots, as usual, are getting their mojo right in December. The Chiefs didn't miss Hunt against woeful Oakland, but just as the Cowboys dropped off during Zeke Elliott's suspension last year, you wonder if the drop-off to Spencer Ware will cost the Chiefs in the postseason. In the NFC, the Rams and Saints remain the top title threats, but the Bears' supposedly vaunted defense was shredded up by Saquon Barkley and the Giants and burned by Odell Beckham Jr.'s arm, not his legs, his arm, on a 49-yard TD pass. Maybe OBJ should be the QB. The Bears returned from a 10-point deficit with under 2 minutes left in regulation, recovering an onside kick and forcing OT on the final play. But they cannot be taken seriously when they lose games such as this. Chase Daniel harassed into mistakes, repeated fumbles in overtime, and suddenly the Bears have the Rams and the Vikings in coming weeks. The Rams, 11-1 and already the NFC West champs, head to Soldier Field on Sunday night to further test the Bears' legitimacy. Other developments in the NFL. The reconstruction last week in Jacksonville, they fired the OC, they benched Blake Bortles, they reamed out the defense, somehow worked for that defense, shut out the smoking hot Andrew Luck and the Colts, while Cody Kessler, of all people, won by simply making no mistakes. And the Panthers are blowing their playoff chances with Cam Newton throwing four picks, sacked four times, and a loss to Tampa Bay. Coach Ron Rivera got feisty with media people wondering if he is concerned about his job security, urging all questions be directed at new owner David Tepper.
Ron, are you concerned about your job security?
I am not going to address that question. Do not ask that question again, please.
Ron, how do you get out of this hole?
Win. That's the only way. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you give yourself a chance, you fight to the very end. You know, and you can, you know, look at it that the last few games we've played have come down to the last opportunities we've had, whether it be on offense or defense, and you just got to make a play. And that's unfortunately something that we haven't been able to do right now, make a play when it matters.
Are you concerned at all that that kind of outside talk will seep into the locker room?
I hope not. But again, you know, as far as I'm concerned, unless Mr. Tepper puts his name on it, I think that everybody needs to just calm down and, you know, let what's really being said or let the truth come out, you know, again. If anybody has a question, I think they should ask Mr. Tepper, but I don't think that's fair to sit there and say sources say.
And in Cleveland's loss to Houston, Baker Mayfield threw three first-half interceptions. Kid, if you're going to yap, you'd better back it up. Finally, on the topic of video, Buffalo Bills defensive end Jerry Hughes denied confronting an official in the tunnel after the loss to Miami, claiming the official called him a bitch. A bitch during the game. Jerry, here is the video evidence that contradicts your claim.
I'll catch you, guaranteed.
And sports leagues are no better when it comes to protecting their players from brain injuries, as we've seen in the NFL. But while Goodell at least is trying to implement dramatic safety measures, I'm going to back up and start this topic over. 3, 2, 1. And sports leagues are no better when it comes to protecting their players from brain injuries, as we've seen in the NFL. But while Roger Goodell at least is trying to implement dramatic safety measures, the National Hockey League stubbornly ignores mounting evidence concerning its own brain trauma crisis. Among the hockey fighters slash enforcers to commit suicide was Todd Ewan, who fatally shot himself in 2015 at age 49. and a new analysis of his brain tissue reveals that Ewan indeed had CTE, the degenerative brain disease, which counters the previous findings of a Canadian doctor who went on to work for the NHL. Is Gary Bettman's league covering up CTE and brain trauma? I think it's clear Bettman is back in the Stone Ages fighting back instead of making hockey safer, and I still have no idea why he remains the commissioner for a multitude of reasons, none more disturbing than this. To the NBA, where the Warriors continue to be the talk of the league because they continue to lose games. A team that lost only 9 regular season games 3 years ago during that record-setting 73-9 campaign already has lost 9 this season, including 6 losses in a row on the road. These are not your champions. Yes, I know they've dealt with injuries to Steph Curry and Draymond Green. They've dealt with the Green-Durant fiasco. But still, on the court, the lack of cohesion and purpose is even more alarming than it was early last season. And now they lose their promising young big man, Damian Jones, for the season, one less body. They clearly lack size inside, though. Having DeMarcus Cousins in waiting, participating in 5-on-5 scrimmages this week, creates a new dimension of hope. Man, we got Boogie Cousins here coming back. And while you'd be foolish to dismiss the Warriors as anything but the favorites to still win their 4th NBA title in 5 years, they are struggling in the 3-point phase that wants to find their very takeover of basketball. Here's a telling stat about their current malaise. The Warriors have taken 710 threes this season, but opponents have taken 110 more. So they are not the kings of the threes anymore. Curry's coming back, but still needed to point that out. Coach Steve Kerr, again looking bedraggled and world-weary, blamed the loss in Detroit over the weekend on himself. Curry did return in that game, though rusty and turnover-prone, and Kerr says there are too many spacing issues, pointing out that certain reserves now are not three-point shooters, meaning general manager Bob Myers might not have constructed the end of this roster to Kerr's liking.
I do care. I did not like our offense tonight. I've got to do a better job. Honestly, tonight was probably a game that I could mark down as one of my worst performances as a coach, honestly. Every time I looked up, we had 3 guys in the paint. We got a little jumbled by the early foul trouble, and the matchups made it difficult having to deal with Drummond and Blake. So we got a little wayward with the early foul trouble, and then we had some combinations out there that we hadn't planned on going to, that clearly were not effective, and that's my fault. But all in all, I've got to do a better job than I've done in the first couple of months of the season. This is it's got to get better. We've got to get better shots. We've got to get more spacing. Get better flow.
Green still fighting that toe injury, won't be back for a few more games. But that leads to another question. After eviscerating Kevin Durant last month, will Green just shut the hell up and play basketball? Or will he continue to be a locker room politician when nobody is in the mood for his BS? Not when this team right now is just another playoff contender in the clogged Western Conference. And here we thought the Greek Freak was a warm and cuddly cartoon character. Nope. Angered that Knicks forward Mario Hayanza dunked on him, then stared and stepped over him at Madison Square Garden, Giannis Antetokounmpo vowed to exact revenge, saying, quote, "I'm going to punch him in the sack next time." Quote, a sack. The Knicks, taking on the attitude of Coach David Fizdale, beat the Bucks in overtime, the fans jacked in the Garden, and the teams next meet Christmas Day. Who knew it? New York-Milwaukee rivalry. Giannis, please, no groin punching on Christmas. Save it for some cold winter night in Milwaukee when the brew town needs to warm up. And they're finally as calm in the frenzied domain of the Lakers, where LeBron James and the boys have won three straight home games to pacify, for now, these celebrities who have streamed back to Staples Center. The other night when the Lakers were struggling against Dallas, Jack Nicholson looked pained to be there at courtside. LeBron, who has been taking over games rather than letting the kids grow through learning losing experiences, realizes the West is a grind, but suddenly they're only a half game behind the Warriors. And if Magic Johnson is looking to trade one of his projects for a much-needed outside shooter and, say, Bradley Beal, I would not be trading Kyle Kuzma. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, the video is so important in domestic violence cases because the evidence is indisputable. And unlike the Ray Rice case, Hunt's accuser was not his significant other, but somebody he says showed up in his apartment and wouldn't leave. Yet, kicking and shoving is still kicking and shoving, an ugly incident, and the NFL cover-up, the Chiefs cover-up, even worse. Chris, what are your thoughts on this, and should Hunt receive a second chance down the road?
No, I don't think Kareem Hunt deserves another chance. And I think people in general do deserve multiple chances sometimes in life. But there has to be some sort of humbleness and acceptance. And I don't think Kareem Hunt has that. I think Kareem Hunt sat in front of Lisa Salters yesterday simply because he was caught. A video surfaced that showed him not in the best light. And he lied to his NFL team, his employer, and they decided to get rid of him because, yes, it's a PR hit. They didn't want to deal with this. You can't do this anymore. Kareem Hunt, that night, which, again, this woman could have said whatever she said to him, he conducted himself like that. Police were called. His boys were interviewed by police. That video is also from TMZ, which I don't understand how they get these videos. The woman is interviewed. So they know what went on. They all know that night was a big issue. And if he told his agent, I'm sure, told him, we probably have to discuss with the team or lawyers need to get involved. If everyone just shrugged their shoulder and said, well, there were no charges pressed, so let's let this go, then shame on them for not doing their due diligence to realize there was a video that was going to surface one day. And again, there must have been some noise about it. There must have been something going on for TMZ to continue to hunt that video down and to bring it to light. Kareem Hunt has no interest in going to anger management classes. He lied. I mean, he didn't lie. But when Lisa Salters asked him, he says, yeah, I've done that and whatever. And then he says, but my people need to schedule that. And she says, so you haven't done it. He's trying to say whatever he can say to try to salvage what has been a very short career where he didn't make a lot of money. And if he wasn't playing football in the NFL, given his obvious anger issues and the fact that he wasn't recruited by many schools. In fact, I believe he was recruited by one, Toledo, where he went. I have a feeling Kareem Hunt might be terribly challenged in life. So I understand him trying to get another chance until he actually seems apologetic for what he did and not just that everybody now knows about it. I don't think he deserves anything.
And Chris, were you as moved as I was and Nick Saban was by Jalen Hurts' flipped script heroics? What does his story say about perseverance? And is it inevitable now that once again Alabama will win a seventh record-breaking title for St. Nick? Also, Chris, did the committee get the Final Four right, or do you think Georgia is more deserving than Oklahoma or Notre Dame?
It's rare that we see so much human emotion from Nick Saban, and it's rare that we see a story like this in sports, and it's wonderful. And yeah, I think that Alabama definitely wins. I mean, who's going to stop Alabama? Come on. Of the Final Four, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Clemson, I mean, we've done this Clemson dance so many times. Alabama's going to win their seventh. I don't know how St. Nick couldn't do it, and the tide couldn't roll over everybody. I don't know if Georgia was more deserving than Oklahoma. And frankly, I guess part of why I don't really care, and I understand people make that argument and everybody loves to break down the Final Four, is it just seems to not matter. It could be Georgia. It could be Oklahoma. It could be Notre Dame. I mean, it doesn't matter. Alabama's going to win.
Finally, Chris, if I had to pick my Super Bowl teams right now, I'd say a rematch of the Rams and the Chiefs despite the Hunt mess. What about you?
Jay, I think there's a good chance that the Rams, now again, the AFC, Rams are in. The AFC has to shake a certain way for Phillip Rivers and the Chargers to not have to travel necessarily, to be able to have home field, maybe the bye week, and maybe play a soft team that they can get by in the divisional round. And maybe somebody to knock off the Patriots, say they wouldn't have to face the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. But I'm actually saying that there is a chance, a slight chance, for Rams-Chargers in the Super Bowl.
Okay, Chris, thanks, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. And be safe out there when it comes to internet-related scammery. Brett Favre thought he was being paid to read a message supporting a veterans group when he said, quote, Brett Favre here with a shout-out to the Handsome Truth and the GDL boys. You guys are patriots in my eyes, so keep waking them up and don't let the small get you down. Keep fighting, too, and don't ever forget the USS Liberty and the men and women who died on that day. God bless and take care, unquote. Brett Favre read that message. Turns out GDL stands for Goyim Defense League, an anti-Semitic group. And Handsome Truth is one of its white supremacist leaders. And upon realizing he was duped, a mortified Favre had to scramble and apologize. Retired down there in southern Mississippi, Favre wasn't savvy enough to figure out he was being tricked, but his lawyers and his agents should have known better. All this for $500, Brett? Think, Brett. Think. Do some research. And in a year when dinosaurs Les Miles and Mac Brown returned to college football coaching, 79-year-old Bill Snyder finally retiring after 27 years at Kansas State. Before Snyder, K-State was a joke program, but in his time, the Wildcats won two-thirds of their games and became a regular Big 12 contender with two conference titles. Ever been to Manhattan, Kansas? I have. If you have, you know it's a miracle that he won as much as he did. The Pac-12 Conference, home of so many sporting legends and fabled programs, is dying before our eyes. This is a Power 5 conference in name only, as Commissioner Larry Scott, claiming his league is a media company more than an athletic conference, is failing on both ends. What once was a desirable part of the country for young athletes to come and play, sunshine, ocean, innovation, trees, desert, is now closer to a group of five mid-major than the SEC. And how sad to see two-thirds of Levi's Stadium empty as Washington beat Utah in the conference title game and Washington gets a Rose Bowl berth against Ohio State. The stench of scandal is in the air as Scott, who makes almost $5 million a year, pays outrageous rent for the conference headquarters in San Francisco. San Francisco, highest rents in America, downtown. Why don't you go to some suburb, Larry? He's also bungled the Pac-12 network, which is almost non-existent compared to the thriving SEC network, which is affiliated with ESPN, and the Big Ten network connected to Fox Sports. And earlier this year, the conference allowed an administrator named Woody Dixon. Never trust a man named Woody, by the way. To interfere with a replay review in a game from his office. New leadership is needed and fast as the likes of USC and UCLA flounder in football, while Arizona among the most scandalous programs in sleaze-ridden college hoops. Needless to say, the Pac-12 is not in the college football playoff for the third time in 4 years, and after Washington's win, you could barely hear Scott, who was drowned out by booze when he was trying to award the trophy to Washington coach Chris Peterson. Speaking of the Pacific Northwest, Seattle will get some long overdue happy news this week. An NHL expansion franchise coming to a booming city. that has gone much too long without a winter sports team. And like Las Vegas, I think the Seattle team will thrive in a new arena on the site of the old Key Arena. And no doubt the NBA won't be far behind after allowing the Sonics to move to Oklahoma City with Kevin Durant and become the Thunder. One of the great mysteries of NBA life is why David Stern, then the commissioner, didn't work harder to keep the Sonics in Seattle while working way too hard to keep the Kings in Little Market Sacramento, huh? And at long last, the beleaguered U.S. men's national soccer team has a coach! His name is Greg Berhalter. He coached the Columbus Crew in Major League Soccer. Is that supposed to make me feel better about our national soccer embarrassment? That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody meet you in life.